Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
BT's out back on the Fan Down with the King. Topic of the day, it is Pete Alonso and his camp reaching out to the Mets, coming with a three-year opt-out deal for the Mets that's exclusive to the Mets. And obviously now the Mets, I guess, can counter or feel like what they're going to do with the move is in the ball's in the Mets' court. They got to now make the move after Boris and Alonso come to them with the 3 years, so short-term deal with the opt-outs. BT, who knows what the financial parameters of are the deal. We don't know that. Jim Duquette was first to report this, so now we got to see how this plays out. Andy Martino said the sides aren't necessarily close right now, but things could move quickly. But this is the first time in a while now, maybe the last several months of free agency, that I have felt like it's inevitable that now Pete, because if it's a short-term deal, it's got to be, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like Pete and the Mets will figure out a way to get this done.
I mean, I could be wrong, but generally doesn't free agency work with the team offering the player the deal rather than the player coming, knocking on the team with a concrete deal offer?
Here's an exclusive offer for you, Matt. You're going to be lucky to have my services for the next 3 years.
It just tells you what the rest of baseball, how they value Pete, or maybe more specifically don't. But I do agree. I think this winds up with Pete being a Met. And I think the Mets are playing this well. There's no need to flinch, no need to jump. Let the market establish itself. Nothing's stuck. So now Boris has to be creative. And right now it's an absolute win so far for Stearns and the Mets.
Yeah, and maybe he goes to the Mets exclusively, not because Pete wants to be a Met. I'm sure part of that is PR saying that, hey, this is where we want to be, whatever. But maybe it's a part of it that knowing that the Mets would be the only team that's legitimately interested here. Although you would think, BT, if let's say the Mets say no.
Yeah.
And then the contract goes from 3 years at whatever price that they're asking to lower than that. Don't you think that that would naturally bring in more teams? Which led me to say that the longer that this goes, the more Stearns and the Mets continue to hold at the market value and not acquiesce at least a little bit, the more likely it is that they lose Pete. If the price comes down and maybe more teams get involved and maybe Pete gets bothered by the way that this has gone on, maybe he does leave. But today, coming back to the Mets basically with hat in hand for a three-year deal makes me feel like they got to figure out a way to get this done.
And I think that they will. Let me ask you something here, because one of the main things that we have, you know, circled is the symbolism of 500 home runs for Pete as a Met.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some quick math before we get back to the calls. Give me, over the next 4 years, what do you think he averages per year?
Homers?
Just home runs. I don't, the other stuff, forget about that. Just home runs.
Over 27.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. Over 27 home runs?
Yeah. Well, you said average over the next 4 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking more like 40.
Oh, I mean,
You don't think so? All right, you want to go 30?
Well, yeah, I mean, 30. But think about what you said.
Jeez.
But think about what you
said.
Slow. Over the next 4 years to average 40 home runs a year. If Pete Alonso averages 40 home runs the next 4 years, he's then way worth
more than, I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? That's a big number.
Especially
if you think he's going to decline a little bit. Like, I'd sign for 33 homers a year for the next 4 years, but I would assume maybe this year he hits 40.
All right, let's put 33. Yeah, so we'll meet a little bit in the middle here. Okay. 33 times 4 is what? 132?
Okay, where would 12, he be at?
12, 13, 130. All right, so now you do a little math here. Even with, and I think it's going to be more than that, but if that's the case, he's at 358. I mean, are we overstating?
Yeah, the 500.
How easy, in quotes, it's going to be for Pete to get to 500?
Yeah, I don't know if he's getting. And by the way, you're right. So that's over 4 years. All right,
yeah.
Let's do your math. Let's say he averages 40.
That's 200. He's got 226. That's 426. A little different.
Yeah, but he's still at least.
Yeah, but at that point, you could piece it together. He might have 1 year where he hits 47.
Yeah, but you might need 2-3 years after that.
If he's at 426 after four, and you basically need 70 more, just kind of even this out. 35.
3 years is safe.
Yeah, it's maybe not as attainable as we think.
I think
even he can't do it, but it's not a layup.
And I think the dream would be, and we brought this up the other day, because on Baseball Night New York, you see the Wright stuff. Like, we had SNY had an exclusive interview with Wright. He, you know, announced it. They officially announced it. And David says all the right things. It's going to be a great event. July 19th. I'm looking forward to it.
It's my third favorite Met of all time.
Class act, David Wright. As classy as they come. Who's the first two?
Doc and Darryl.
Mets.
And Yankees.
And the one thing that's special about David is he didn't leave the organization. Look how rare and special that is. Pete has the potential to be that. Now, he's not going to be David Wright, the player, but Pete can be a homegrown, lifelong Met that even surpasses some of Wright's records and maybe one day have his number 20 retired. Like, I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility.
It's not, but when David Wright was 30, it was unthinkable to think that, now you didn't know about the spinal stenosis, but it was unthinkable to think that David Wright might go elsewhere.
I mean, I said it at the time. I didn't get in trouble for it, but I could have on the network.
Yeah.
On SNY, if they don't sign David Wright, they need to fold up shop. Like, that's how, you're right, that's how unthinkable it was.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, no, there's no doubt. He's your Jeter, and, you know, he's, and I love David Wright. He's I would say underrated, but I do still think some people underrate him. He's just awesome. But when he was 30, all right. So, yeah, when he was 30, I mean, he hit 307 the year before that. He hit 306, back-to-back All-Stars at that point, you know, hitting. Now, the home runs obviously dropped at that point. There were some back issues.
All right, City Field ruined his power, but.
Yeah, but City Field was back in 09.
Right, but look,
when he went from 33 to 10. I know, that was a big drop. But then he picked it up after that a couple of years. He had some bigger home run totals. The point being, when David Wright was 30, even though there was only one more full season after that, and then two bit seasons in 15, 16, and I guess even 18, if you count that for the few games, nobody could sit there and say, boy, David Wright's not an amazing all-around player. There was really nothing to criticize about David Wright. You didn't know how long he'd be great for, but like we're sitting here saying, or could the Mets possibly be better with Pete? From a baseball perspective,
right?
Nobody thought that about David Wright.
No, this is different, right?
They're not even close as players, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Advantage Wright.
Right, but because of Pete's great skill with power, and because he is a homegrown Met and is going to have a lot of those records, assuming that, now, again, to your point, the initial point, 3-4 years, not going to get it done. You need more 6-7 years, and oof. I would say at this point, there is no chance Pete Alonso hits 500 homers as a member of the Mets.
I think I agree. And I think I heard it so many times that I just assumed it. And obviously, you know, when he's a preeminent power guy, I'm like, yeah, it's not really a leap of faith. But just doing some basic math and pushing this thing forward, I mean, that's...
All right. Well, also now we have the definitive that he's not getting a long-term deal from the Mets. How many more years do you think max? Like, if you had to say max, Pete Alonso is going to be a Met.
I want to give you an answer, but I got to take you through my thought process first. I'll try to do it fast.
Well, there could be multiple answers here.
Yeah, I could easily say, all right, he'll get a third year with a team option or his option 4, and then by the end he fizzles out and they both shake each other's hands and he moves on. He could get a 3-year deal and he could absolutely crush it and with Soto, right. And he's vibing and he's thriving and he stays healthy.
Give him another 3-year deal maybe?
Yeah, well maybe, and the average picks back up and now there's been no discernible drop in performance and he's closer to 500, some other benchmarks you could justify tacking on 2 more years. It's really hard, so I'll just give you my honest answer. I think it's like 3 years max.
Yeah. So even if you were to go 6 years max, do the math on this.
60, it's 40 home runs a year?
No, let's do a little lower.
30?
Well, you could do 40. What would 40 get us at?
240.
And that would be?
For over 6 years.
Yes.
What is it? 240. That would be
famous words that we should never say on the show. Let's do some math.
272. I think the better calculation will be if it's 6 years, give them 30 on the average.
Right.
Get to 180. 226 plus 180 is about right around 4. A little bit more than 4.
So even if he averaged a little over 30.
For 6 now. Now
right,
we're pushing this
pushing
thing
forward. It's still,
he's still 100 short.
Right. And I don't think that you're going to see Pete Alonso on the Mets beyond, I would say max, absolute max, 4 years. Like, I still think there's a chance they sign a 4-year contract with maybe a little lower AAV.
Yeah.
But I do not see it under any circumstances being more than that now. And even at the end of it, if the Mets were struggling to give Pete a long-term deal now at age 30, why on God's earth would they give him another 2 or 3 years beyond the end of a 3 or 4 year contract after that?
Well, the only reason you would do it is because he's proven viable and the evidence could change their mind. And at that point, it's a clear move to DH and it's easier to justify. Plus, you're looking at records.
Okay, but you also have Juan Soto already on the book. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I guess it's possible. I would say that he's not going to be a Met beyond 4 years. BT and Sal on the fan. Let's get back to your calls. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. John is in North Babylon. What's up, John?
Hey, what's going on, boys? How you doing?
How are you, Johnny?
Hey, bud.
Good, good. All right. So I agree. I think with Boris and company coming to the Mets with this, you know, exclusive, you know, breaking news, whatever, I think it's more likely that he's going to come back. Having said that, if you have to pivot, would bringing in Bregman for the same money, now I would say this, I'd rather give the 4-120 to Pete, but if you give Bregman the 4-120 to play third, move Vientos to first, and maybe you bring in Santander, you create Pete in the aggregate, if you will. Is that crazy?
That's a lot of big contracts because Santander is going to get, you know, 5 years and Bregman's going to probably get six.
Yeah, but not at crazy money, though. 17, 18 yeah. million a year for him.
No chance.
Santander is getting more than that.
No, listen. You go on SpotTrack. They're saying he's only worth about 18.
I don't care what they're saying. He's not. He's getting more than that.
What are they saying Pete's worth?
Then why wouldn't a team go out and go sign him for that big money? Same with Bregman.
Well, because they're playing the game, John. You know the answer to that. What is Alonso's worth on SpotTrack?
It's about 30. I think it was 30, 35.
Wait, so the hell are you insane? 30, 35 to 17 for something? What?
And thank you for the call, John. Interesting point, though. To answer his question, I would rather invest in Pete than I would Bregman if I am the Mets. If I am the Yankees, it is Bregman. If I'm the Mets, because of all things considered, I think the Mets need an impact bat in their lineup right now more than anything else. And that the best one available is Pete Alonso, plus familiarity with the franchise in this city, in the postseason. To me, it is a no-brainer. I'm not saying Pete's the better player than Bregman because I don't think he is.
Uh-huh.
But I think the Mets would be much better off investing in Pete Alonso than Alex Bregman.
I get it to an extent. We've had the conversation. Yep. And I don't really disagree enough to push back to it. I get it. Hoff just said 29 is their projected value for Pete on the SpotTrack. Okay, thank you, Hoff.
And Santander is 17?
No way.
I'm looking that up now.
There's no chance. There's no way.
Come on.
And I'm not even a Santander fan.
Me neither, but if the price is 1 year 17 or whatever, he's got to take a short-term deal, then okay. But then wouldn't you think other teams would get involved?
And that's not the price tag. What is it at, Hoff?
It's 17.7, he said.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, 5 years, 88, they say.
There's no way he's not getting more than that.
Five years, 88.
I mean, Christian Walker only got 3 years at 60. Now, I know he's older.
I think the market in general has come down. I mean, obviously outside of Soto, but he's the anomaly here.
Yeah.
The market in general, teams have wisened up.
Well, Max Fried got some money. I mean, outside of the top that are out there, I think that Tanner Scott's going to get a nice, even if it's a 1 year, whatever, he's going to get something big.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of a bullpen arm, short-term, higher AAV. Like, that to me makes sense. I mean, for the right guy, I'm just saying, like, for whatever reason, the bat, like, Santander, you and I don't love him.
I don't.
And maybe that's why other teams don't love him, but, like, if you're talking about it, a good price here for under $20 million a year.
If that's what it is. I mean, but...
You wouldn't take him in a Yankee outfield instead of Dominguez, for example, or the Mets even...
Instead of Dominguez? No, he's an awful defender.
I'm saying going into the year, though.
No way. No, I'm going to roll with Dominguez.
You could argue that the Yankees need maybe an outfield here. They were looking into that.
I'm not saying that, that's why I want a Tucker. Yeah. No, but I'm going to... I mean, Tucker, that's one thing. I mean, Santander is not a good outfielder. He can't run.
So you want Santander under no circumstance?
I really don't. I don't want him.
Let's say for the Mets to DH. Like, I don't love him.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, right.
That's different. It's different. No, I mean, a DH is different. I mean, the Yankees have Stanton, so you got to keep a little DH red. You know, the 3-4-5 times a month you're going to have Aaron Judge DH, you got to have that space available, you know?
You're telling me just for the Yankees, because I made this and I thought it was a good idea.
Go ahead.
If Nolan Arenado was traded to the Yankees,
mm-hmm.
and they brought Santander in as well because it's not a crazy contract, you're telling me that lineup isn't loaded?
Well, all right, I have a question for you. All right, so I'm okay with Arenado because his defensive metrics, he can still pick.
By the way, me too. At this point, I'd still prefer Bregman, but I'd much rather have Arenado than LeMahieu or Oswaldo Cabrera.
Oh, God, geez.
Like, just get Arenado.
Even Peraza might be in that. I can't do that again. So, and I like Cabrera once a week, but twice. No, DJ's cooked. So I like Arenado. But if you get Santander, where is he playing?
Playing left field. And I got to be honest with you, I understand that.
Who's playing center field?
Bellinger and Judge's right field. And I know that means Dominguez is going to be in AAA, and people don't like that.
I don't.
But can I say one thing?
Yeah.
The Yankees were in the World Series last year.
Mm-hmm.
They should be trying to get back there. Jason Dominguez is not proven.
Oh, also, by the way, forget about him not being proven. How about he actually has a full season in the minor leagues for a change?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, shouldn't be about placating Dominguez, and I'm not saying that they're going to, and I don't think that they will. It's also the Yankees don't need to rely on Dominguez, but why not let him actually dominate and play a full year in the minors while you build a team that could go out there and win a World Series, which is what they're trying to do, and get him some reps.
But he did dominate at the end of the summer.
I'm talking about for a full season.
Yeah, I don't need to have him down there for a full season.
He can't catch the ball in the outfield.
Well, let's see if that's true. It very well might be something that has crept into his game inexplicably.
Think about it last year.
That is now a massive problem. I just want to see.
And if he was really that stud and ready to go last year, I'm not saying he can't be a stud because I do think he can be. But he clearly wasn't last year because if he were, he would have been in their lineup.
Well, no. Just because they didn't put him in doesn't mean he wouldn't have responded if they did put him in. Those are two very different things.
I don't think they thought he was ready.
You can't control if you put your name in a lineup.
But I don't think he was ready to do that.
Think about this. Wouldn't you love to do afternoon drive? Do you think you could?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, you think you could do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but you can't go and do it until somebody puts you there if they ever did.
Understood.
Same thing with the batting
order. But I'm also not dropping the ball in left field or center field every day. I mean, come on. I'm in and out the park. What are we doing here? No, I just... What do I got to do? No, I do think that Dominguez has that potential. I just don't think he's... ready as a ball player.
He might not be.
By the way, I'm not even talking about offensively, which is a whole nother situation. I'm talking about defensively.
Yep.
If you can't play center field or left field in the big leagues, that's a problem.
Sal, he might not be ready. I'll give you that. But between Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, Luis Gil, Clark Schmidt, Rodon, a lights-out bullpen, Aaron Judge, Chisholm, Bellinger, Volpe defensively, Wells both, you can let him grow a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like there's nothing around the guy. Now, I'm not saying he's coming out hitting 330 out of the chute, and he's got to dispel the notion that he's no longer a train wreck in the outfield. He's got to prove that, not the other way around. He's got to earn it. But you know if he has a good camp, and he probably will because you're facing lower-level pitching. He'll get some bombs. It'll be nice weather. He'll run. He'll look the part. And then once the season starts, he's got
to
produce.
Let's get back to Alonzo. Pete is in Seaford. What's up, Pete?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
What's up, Petey?
You know, if the contract that's being offered to the Mets is like a year one overpay with a team option for the second year, then fine, bring back Pete. My problem with Alonzo is that, and I think this is why Soto's projections that came out the other day look so, you know, pedestrian relative to the contract. Alonzo is not going to protect Soto the way that Judge did. That's not some groundbreaking.
I don't know anybody
is
in baseball.
No one.
I know. But Alonzo, you know, his strikeouts are up.
Yeah.
The batting average, you know, he batted more than his weight this past year, but barely. He still can't lay
sure
off.
About that?
He still can't lay off the slider in the lefty batter's box. If you look at Bregman, yes, the advanced stats say that Bregman's going to lose home runs in Citi Field. He's going to lose home runs in a lot of places that aren't Houston. But he's still a gap-to-gap guy. Alonzo struck out exactly twice as much as Bregman did, and despite striking out twice as much as Bregman did, somehow grounded it into one more double play than Bregman did. So,
wow. You
know, those are real numbers, guys.
Yeah,
I don't
get it.
You know, Jr. market, I think would be negligent. So if you're stuck with Alonzo, unless you're going to do what the other caller suggested, you have Alonzo at DH and Vladdy at first base, I don't know how you take yourself out of that market next summer.
I mean, that's fair, Pete, and thank you for the call.
Good call.
I want the power of Pete Alonzo. That's what I'm looking for here. So I understand all the things that Bregman brings. I understand all of Pete's deficiencies. Believe me, more than anybody, I understand Pete's deficiencies. I'm not even a big Pete Alonzo fan. His power is valuable in the Mets lineup. They are going to need it. Now, I do think that if they play it right and it's not a ridiculous ask for the 3 years, why couldn't he be a DH in year two and year three? But it's got to be the right deal. If you're giving Pete $120 million, I don't know, as I said earlier when a call brought it up, BT, if it's realistic to think they're going to have the contract for Soto and Lindor and Nimmo and Pete at a high AAV for 4 years and
try to get Vladdy or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'd like to say? I know we got a break here. We got Costas coming up next, right?
Yes.
Nick, that'll be good. Getting to the games.
Yes.
I would like to see Pete not only come back as a Met, but come back with a totally different look. Shave the head, because the haircut's always weird with Pete. Let's be honest. His haircut's always a mess.
Yeah.
Shave the dome and come back with a beard.
Badass.
Yeah.
All right.
How's that for a look, Met fans?
Yeah, I'm in for that.
You know what I mean about the hair. It's like a
show of opening day.
Chilly day. Sure. Yeah, sure.
BT and Sal on the Fan will come back. We'll have Nick Costos on the other side as we start to dive in to Wild Card Weekend. We'll do that when we come back. We're going to Tierney Salicata back on the fan. And right now, we welcome in Nick Costos. He's on the line, the host of You Better, You Bet, and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Check the latest lines on the BetMGM app. Catch You Better, You Bet weekdays, 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern on the BetQL Network. And watch from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on NBC Sports Fast Channel or Peacock. I listen to him every Sunday morning. It is a fun show to listen to. Can't wait. Again, are you on Saturday, Nick, or just Sunday?
Oh, yeah, we're on Saturday this weekend, next week, 8 a.m. to noon.
There we go. Look at you.
Yeah, look at me. No rest of the weary. Yeah, looking thrilled. Can't wait. Yeah.
This is, to me, the best two weekends in all of sports, wildcard weekend and then divisional round. Let's just start with this, Nick. Give me the game you're most looking forward to this wildcard weekend.
Oh, just as a fan?
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever. You can give me the bet to it as well. The number one game you're looking forward to watching and maybe betting on this weekend.
Oh, Packers-Eagles, definitely, on Sunday afternoon. Because this is it's the only game that features two teams that I think you can say that the upside for both teams playing in the game is to go to the Super Bowl with Philadelphia and Green Bay. I don't think you have that in any other game this weekend. So you can like Baltimore to go to the Super Bowl. I don't think anyone would make the case the Steelers can get there.
Yep.
Buffalo can go. Denver can't. I don't think Tampa or Washington can. I don't think Minnesota or the Rams can. So the Eagles-Packers is definitely, and it's a 2-7 matchup. That's the highest leverage game this weekend, the one on Sunday afternoon on Fox.
It's a good read. All right, let me take it a step back and let's jump tomorrow. So my early read on both games, Chargers-Texans, low-scoring game, low-ish. I like the Chargers. Ravens, I think they squashed the Steelers. I think Steelers are dead. How are you reading these games in a nutshell?
Okay, so I bet both underdogs. One of them made me want to drink a glass of bleach. The other, when I click the button, I feel like I'm going to win. So I have Texans +3. I have Steelers +10. And I will just say, people out there, let's say you think I'm an idiot. I've been known to be one. It can definitely happen again. The betting advice that I will give, and this is important, like whether or not you agree with my bets or not, if you like the Chargers, lay -2.5. If you like the Texans, bet +3. If you like the Ravens, find a 9.5 and lay that. If you like the Steelers, bet +10. Give yourself the best chance to win. Why I like Houston. I think the point spread is insane in this game. So, you know, college football tonight, Ohio State is playing Texas, right? And Ohio State's a 6-point favorite. I think it's going to come off 6 and go down. And the reason why is because you are paying a tax now to bet Ohio State because of how good Ohio State has looked thus far in the college football playoff, smashing Tennessee and obliterating Oregon on New Year's Day in the Rose Bowl. So what you have in these two games tomorrow is you are paying a tax if you want to bet the Chargers or the Ravens because of how bad both the Texans and Steelers have looked coming down the stretch, which doesn't mean that the Chargers can't win by 10 or the Ravens can't win by 20. I'm saying that Chargers 3 to me is a crazy number. Like Chargers 1, okay, I can get behind that. Big difference between those two. So Chargers win by 3, I push my bet. And I don't think the Chargers win by more than 3. I think the Texans win the game more often than the betting market thinks. Stroud obviously has it in his range of outcomes to play really well in a playoff game. We saw it last year on wild card weekend when he was a home underdog to Joe Flacco and the Cleveland Browns. Texans defense is awesome. Great pass rush for the Houston Texans. Now, again, they were brutal down the stretch. Chargers can win. I think 3 is a valuable bet. I bet +3.
Don't you think, Nick, before you get to the Saturday night game, because BT and I touched on this yesterday, and you just mentioned it with the other teams in the AFC who you think could get to a Super Bowl, don't you think that this game Saturday afternoon could be a game changer? At least in my mind, you obviously like the Texans. I still lean Chargers. But I also think the Chargers could be the one team to upset the Chiefs, which could then make the path easier for the Bills or the Ravens.
I don't see it for the Chargers upsetting the Chiefs. I don't think anyone's beating the Chiefs, so I may be the wrong person to ask. You know, I think you could have made the case way earlier in the season that maybe the Chargers would have a chance. At this point, I don't think they've got it. I don't think they have it offensively to be able to outscore Mahomes. I like Herbert. I don't think he's on that level. I love Jim Harbaugh. So I think, Sal, if and when the Chargers win and we get Chargers-Chiefs, which is likely to happen because the Ravens and Bills are both huge favorites. That's the 2-3. They would play each other next weekend. And then the Chargers, if they beat the Texans, would go to Kansas City. I feel like L.A. will be a popular upset pick next week. I will not be picking the Chargers to win that game outright. I will take the Chiefs, and I think the Chiefs will three-peat.
So we're talking to Nick Costos. Interesting. I don't share that. I've said that as we've had you on all year. They've just won too many tight ones, but they win. It's the opposite of losing, so I get why you still believe in them, and they're very well coached, clear, and that Pat. Bigger picture here. There's a lot of pressure for a lot of guys this weekend, whether it's Josh Allen, Lamar, McDermott, probably more than Allen, Sirianni. Who has the most pressure of anybody this weekend to win?
To win the game?
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson. If they lose, so if the Bills lose to the Broncos, it's a frickin' disaster. Right?
Like, yeah.
They can't lose that game.
Yeah.
But
will McDermott get fired if that happens?
He should.
Okay, yeah.
He should.
Okay.
He should have gotten fired last year. No, I'm being serious.
But like, then how is your answer not McDermott?
Well, I guess it could be McDermott. I just feel like I don't care about him. But yes, he matters.
I got you.
Like, Lamar is much more interesting to me than McDermott. And I don't know that the Bills would fire him. They should have fired him last year. We never see, by the way. Like, Allen can win a Super Bowl at some point. It's going to be with a different head coach. You never see like a pairing that's lasted this long like win a Super Bowl if they haven't already. You could say the same thing, by the way, about John Harbaugh and Lamar Jackson. But I mean, if it's not just the Ravens would lose tomorrow, they would lose to the Steelers, which would continue kind of this narrative. And I know he played well against them when they played a couple weeks ago on Saturday. Then Lamar like doesn't play well against Pittsburgh. And did you guys see the All-Pro voting just came out?
Yeah.
And Lamar is the first team All-Pro quarterback, which likely means he's going to win most of that. Not definitely, but likely that he's going to win MVP.
Wow.
So it's going to be back-to-back in his third. And if he goes out wild card weekend to their biggest rival as a double-digit favorite, I mean, that's what everyone already says about Lamar. Because it moved from, well, he's a running back playing quarterback, and that's asinine because he's awesome, obviously. And now it's, well, like he can't play well in January. He's got to win, and you got to dispel that. And it's one thing to get to the title game and, like, lose to KC. It would be another thing entirely to lose at home as a double-digit favorite to a pit, and sorry, BT, in advance.
That's a good answer.
To lose to a Steelers team
that's
lost the most consecutive games going into a postseason since the 1986 Jets.
Now you, jeez, you laid that out well. That is hard to push back on. That's a good job.
And look, I love Lamar Jackson. I said he's the best football player I've ever seen. Just football player. You watch that guy. He's not a quarterback. He's not a running back. I think he's the most skilled athlete that has ever put on football.
I'll take Jerry Rice and Lawrence Taylor for 100, Alex, by the way.
I mean, I don't think that those guys can do. I know they were great. I don't think they could do what Lamar could do. Anyway, back to that Saturday night game, Nick. You say you're leaning Steelers. You talk about Lamar and his greatness. A part of me still believes in the Steelers as well. How can that be the case after we've watched them the last several weeks? I know they got lucky to cover against the Bengals last time we saw them, but why Steelers in this game keeping it close against this explosive Ravens offense?
And I think you and I were both happy that was the case.
Yes, very happy.
Little text action with Sal Licata with the Steelers covering the spread of last Saturday night against the Bengals.
Yeah.
Needed that. So they played a couple weeks ago on Saturday. Ravens were about a touchdown favorite. Fast forward a couple weeks, Ravens look great, Steelers look terrible. Ravens number one receiver, Zay Flowers, not playing in the game. Point spread's 10. Nope. I'll take the 10 with Pittsburgh, and I will run the risk of them getting boat raced and Russ looking terrible. It is my hope, and I can't guarantee it's going to happen. You can't assume rational coaching. You can't assume it. That the Steelers open it up a little bit, because what they're doing with this ground game and not throwing until they get behind is not working. And Mike Tomlin's on record saying, like, they're going to empty the kitchen sink here. Is that the right expression? Throw the kitchen sink?
Well, whatever,
Yeah, whatever it is. I think you're going to see Justin Fields have packages in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if and when the Steelers get in the red zone that Justin Fields comes in as the quarterback,
which I
think is interesting in prop markets potentially. Mm. So, like, I will be honest with you guys. It is a number play for me on the Steelers at plus 10. 10 has to be the number for me to make that bet.
So, the Vikings here, all right? Do you think that they've already made internally their decision on Darnold, you know, a ballpark, what they want to pay him? Do they want to trade JJ, or are they still, you know, hey, let's see what he does and we'll go from there?
I think it's the latter. And just something to consider, right, with NFL team building, and this is not to disparage Darnold. This is just like the reality of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
It is far easier to construct a team capable of winning a championship with a quarterback on a rookie deal.
Yep.
So, like, I know Darnold's had a great year. He flamed out. He was, let's be honest, he was horrible on Sunday night.
I thought we were going to get a brutal there from you. I was looking forward to getting...
He was brutal.
That's my boy Aaron Glenn. Tied him up in knots. Future Jets coach Aaron Glenn.
Honestly, Glenn called. Aaron Glenn's done an awesome job. Darnold couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat.
Yeah.
He was embarrassing.
It was bad.
If that happens again, why would the Vikings give him all that? When they clearly believe in J.J. McCarthy, right? They drafted him, traded up to get him. So, I mean, if Darnold wins the Super Bowl or something, then yeah, like they're going to bring Darnold back. Otherwise, like right now, you ask me my opinion, I think it makes a lot more financial sense and also dollars and cents spelled differently that the Vikings would roll with J.J. McCarthy and let Sam Darnold sign somewhere else.
How about that game Monday night? What the impact of having the game move to a neutral site in Arizona due to the L.A. wildfires? Did that move the line at all? How much of an impact will that have on the result of this game?
So it did, and I'm surprised by it. So we were basically hovering around to pick them in the game. Like the Rams would be a 1-point favorite, and the Vikings would be a 1-point favorite. Just basically like haggling around who should be favored in the game. And now Minnesota's out, and it's never going to go to 3. It won't, because the Rams would just get bet immediately. Minnesota's a 2.5-point. It's not a road favorite anymore. It's a neutral site game. Minnesota's favored by 2.5, and I push back on that a little bit. If the idea was going to be that this was going to be a pick'em, and I think that that's what it would have closed on Monday night. The Rams, like, this is nothing against Rant. This is just the truth. Like, the football team that people in Los Angeles root for plays in Las Vegas. Like, LA's a Raider town. The Rams have no home field advantage. The Chargers have no home field advantage. So I don't think the point spread should have moved, like, at all. I like the Rams on Monday night plus the 2.5 against the Vikings.
Yeah, but what about the, I hear you, but what about the point spread moving just because of the disruption to the normal work week where they're distracted, obviously more important things on their mind and they're out of routine? Mm. Maybe it's applicable to that.
Well, I would say it's like you got professionals, the game's not until Monday, so they have a little more time. I think this is more, okay, it's a neutral site game. Minnesota is rated higher than the Rams for sure. On a neutral field, and this is probably like the actual difference between the teams is 2.5. Like, I think that that's just probably right. Mm-hmm. And just keep in mind, like, when this point spread opened on Sunday night for this game, Minnesota was a juiced 2.5-point favorite. So, like, basically, what that means is all home field, like, got them basically, was that Minnesota wasn't 3. That's it. So I think this is probably the accurate like difference between the teams, which now means, BT, we can bet our opinion.
Yeah.
And my opinion is that Sam Darnold shouldn't be favored over Matthew Stafford in a playoff.
I like the Rams too. Hey, quick one for you that's not about football. I wrote this down from yesterday. I had to get your thoughts on this. So Sal brought this up. It was so random. The other night, Xavier. So I got to ask him about this, Sal. Yeah.
Oh, against St. John's, right?
No, the women's side. Xavier's women's team has lost 44 straight Big East conference games, okay? They were playing UConn, who, as you know, was obviously really good.
Oh, and they're 50-point dogs and they covered, right?
Well, yes. I think it was 46.5. No, there 50 or 46.5?
It was 49.5.
And they made money. They did cover. You're
UConn
right.
UConn women covered.
Correct. Is there money to be made? I've never bet women's basketball. I don't know. Is that something we got to start tapping into here?
So, Paige Beckers didn't play in the game,
no,
right?
No, she did not.
But I mean, like, everyone knows that, and the point spread was still 50. So, yep, I mean, yep. I don't think there was, like, an edge to be glad. So I'll say this about college basketball. The thing with women, and I don't pay attention to women's, being honest. I don't pay attention to women's college basketball until we get, like, deep into the tournament. And then, like, I'm kind of into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people will tell you, in men's college basketball, like, there are so many games that it's impossible for everything to be correct. Like, in the NFL playoffs, we can have our opinions, right? I can say, okay, I don't think the point spread should be 10 in Steelers-Ravens. But, like, okay, like, it could be 9.5, though. Like, the margins are so thin. Everything's right. There's millions upon millions of dollars being bet. There's so much data. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, you get some curtain jerk and jabrek. Like, I don't want to, like, insult the team, but, like, here's Canisius and Ryder.
Yeah.
Like, you think that's getting the same attention as Packers-Eagles? So you will see oftentimes, right? We used to do a segment on You Better You Bet when Ken Barkley was my co-host of the show called Overnights. And Ken would model the games, right? Ken Palm does this for free. Ken Pomeroy was like a known college basketball,
sure.
Like handicapper, like analytics guy,
yeah, yeah.
Where a total can open, like I'm making this up, 137 at night, the overnight. And in the morning, you'll wake up and it's 145.5.
Hmm.
Like, because it can't pop, there's too much. And like college teams guard this like it's national security. Like NFL, like someone stubs a toe, you have to report it.
Yeah.
Like college, someone could lose a limb and they don't report it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of info that's under the radar, right? So Like, college is easier in that sense, but you really have got to be in the weeds and paying attention.
Interesting.
It is interesting. I saw that line. I couldn't believe it. 4.5 points. And of course, they ended up covering anyway. Let's finish up on the Sunday games real quick. We touched on them a little bit, but we didn't get your betting perspective. First of all, just real quick, is Denver a live dog in that game at all?
So live to win? I don't think so. I don't think Denver will win the game. Could they cover? Possibly. If you gave me $100 and said, take the side of the game, I'd lay the Bills. But I don't feel confident about this game in terms of the side. I just think the Bills will win. Total was 47, 46 and a half. Now it's 47 and a half. My advice would be, and I'll say this on my show on the Fan Sunday morning, if it goes down to 47, I would bet the over.
Okay.
But I will not have a bet on the side of the game.
Packers, Eagles, you said that's the game you're looking forward to most. It is. I see a 5.5 point spread right here with Philadelphia. How are you reading that game?
I like Green Bay. Now, this bet does not come without risk. Jordan Love practiced in full yesterday. The expectation is that Jordan Love will practice in full again today. Now, he has an elbow injury, and he couldn't feel his throwing hand, which seems bad for a quarterback, last Sunday in the loss to the Bears. So, you know, maybe he gets hit the wrong way, and this is funky, and then Malik Willis has to come in, and it's a total train wreck disaster. But assuming Love's healthy in the game, and I'll bet accordingly here, because you're just not going to know until the game starts, so I'll have, like, a bigger bet on the Saturday games than this one financially. I think that the difference between these two teams is not what this point spread is. And just as a point of comparison, not that look-ahead markets are gospel or the be-end-end-all of things, but the look-ahead for this game prior to Week 18, because this was the most likely matchup, was Eagles -3, juice towards Green Bay, like to come off of 3. And now we're at almost 6. Now Love gets hurt, Christian Watson tears his ACL, Eagles basically have a bye week for their best players. So sure, like, you know, you want to think Philly should be 3, 3.5, I get it. I think the spread's too big. Jordan Love's a big game player. Hurts has been in concussion protocol for almost 3 weeks. I'll have the Packers in the game on Sunday afternoon to cover.
And quickly, Sunday night, Bucks and Commanders, what do you got there?
Yeah, on NBC and Peacock. And by the way, you can watch my show on Peacock on NBC Sports Now. It's cheap plug, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. I bet Washington +3.5. The number's 3 now. If I were to bet this game now, I would just bet the Commanders to win. I think Baker Mayfield's awesome. What I'm about to say is not anti-Baker Mayfield. It is pro-Jaden Daniels. I think the Commanders have the superior quarterback in the game on Sunday night. I'll take Washington.
All right, there you have it, Nick. Enjoy your wild card weekend. We appreciate your time as always. Looking forward to it.
I can't wait, by the way, to find out your best bet, Sal. So I'll be in touch with you this week.
I've been hot this year. You know who it's going to be as we're in game action. I start texting Nick. I'm like, hey, what the hell's going on with this team? Have some fun during these games. But I've been hot the last couple weeks. I don't love anything this weekend. I got to be honest with you. We'll do our picks later. I don't have strong feels yet, Nick. That's why I like talking to you, taking all my info in here, doing all the analysis. But I don't have a strong feel yet here.
Well, who's UConn's women playing this weekend?
Don't know, don't care.
I bet you didn't think I was going to know that Paige Beckers didn't miss the game. Yeah, all over all this stuff.
Oh, you're on top of it. All right, Nick, ahead. It's what your tagline.
Minimal sweats, winning bets, and all that jazz. Have a great weekend.
That was the host of You Better, You Bet, and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Costos. Insider Calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. I know we'll get more into it, BT, with our own picks, and we'll discuss Wildcard Weekend. But even just hearing Nick and going over those lines, I don't. You have strong feels already about this weekend?
A couple of the games I do.
For me, I got to go with the gut feel.
Yeah, me too. I love the Ravens.
I'm going to love the Ravens.
I told you that. I love them.
You see, I'm even torn on that one where initially it was the Steelers, but I could certainly see your side. And if I'm such a Lamar fan, which I am, how do you not take the chance that they, you know, blow them out of the building?
That sub package, though, with Fields, whether it's goal line, whether it's third or fourth down, midfield, that they go for it there.
That's
very interesting. You just need him to move the chains once or twice and it could change everything.
That's why coaching.
It's a lot
Tomlin
of wood to lay.
The other thing is I like the Chargers initially, but
I like the Chargers.
Yeah. I could see a spot with the Texans. I don't know. We'll pick the games coming up at 1:20. But either way, I haven't had a strong feel just yet. All right, when we come back, we'll get back to your calls as well. BT and Sal back on the Fan. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Let's get back to the calls. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We've been talking a lot of Pete Alonso. We just did some wild card with Nick Costos, but it's been largely an Alonso day. We did talk about Aaron Glenn as well, turning down the interview for the Patriots. Real quick, though, BT, you did say the Jets are interviewing somebody else. Who is this?
Yeah, Hoff saw this. Hoff, the Jets, we were doing the interview with Costos. They reached out to the Maryland coach?
Mike Locksley.
Locksley, right?
Come on. Top notch.
And not Pete Carroll?
What is going on with that?
What'd I do with my glasses? I can't. What I do?
They can't find my glasses.
Are they any farther than your sweatshirt pocket?
That's yeah, they are.
There you go.
SNY's busting my chops here. I get the producers texting me throughout the course of the show. Take some selfies. They want something for the show later. Take some selfies. A happy face, an angry face, a surprise face. I'm like, I'm in the middle of a show.
Hey, tell them this is job number one.
I did. Like,
and
what,
job number two.
They're like, it takes 5 seconds. Yeah, it takes 5 seconds. You know how stupid I feel taking a selfie with a happy face or an angry face?
Yeah.
So I did it with the glasses off during that last break.
Jeez, that's why you couldn't find
them. Yeah, and I can't find my glasses. Anyway, so yeah, I've never heard of this guy. They could interview this Maryland head coach.
He's been there for a while.
Not Pete Carroll?
I don't get it. Listen, Boomer's going to have all the information. My boy Boomer, of course, my guy Boomer, right?
Yeah, football there info. We go.
Maryland Terp Boomer is. Loxley's been there about, I want to say, 5 or 6 years. I know he's been to a couple of bowls. That's a tough job. So I'd be lying if I said that I'm sitting here dialed into Maryland week to week. I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
I do know that he's elevated the program, and there's just certain jobs that are inherently tougher than others. Football at Maryland is very hard. So, I mean, listen,
they can't hire.
No, they're not going to. But I think what you do is, and, you know, it's a very expansive search here. And this is something that I've said. It seems. What do you say?
That can't be right.
What?
He's been Maryland head coach since 2019. His overall head coaching record?
Yeah.
35-67.
No way.
Dude, that's got to
no,
be...
No, but listen, so I was right. He's been there about 5 or 6 years. All right, listen, if anybody knows anything about it, at least I know something about the guy.
Yeah.
So I would challenge you, Hoff, to go and do a little bit more, because this is what matters to me. So if that's his record, and I believe that you probably did the math right, what was Maryland the first the 3, 4, 5 years before he got there? I know they had like one win, one seat. Like they
but
are
then he built it up.
The dregs yeah. of foot. They're, it's a tough job, dude.
He was the head coach of New Mexico too.
Okay. That's his career record. Job. Yeah. That's his career record. Okay.
That's still not great.
Yeah. No, they can't hire. The Jets can't hire him.
Positive. Hire him.
Positive in bowl games.
Yeah.
3-0.
I think he's won 3 straight, if I'm not mistaken.
Can somebody though ask me, BT? This is a serious question.
Go
forget
ahead.
About my affinity for Pete Carroll here.
Yeah.
Just like logically speaking, how could you interview this guy from Maryland but not Pete Carroll? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, he's trying to get some information.
Wouldn't you think that Pete Carroll's a little more qualified to give some information?
Yeah, I would have the conversation. Listen, I don't know. Maybe they reached out quietly to Pete's reps, and Pete said, I want to come back to coach. I don't want to move to the East Coast. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
An interview with Chicago, right?
No, it's not the East Coast, necessarily. That's Midwest. I mean, you know, I know it's a... We tend to simplify things doing this, like call him. Why didn't he call? I get it. The Jets, even though it seems like they are, they're not dumb. Like, they're not. Woody's not a good owner, but I don't think that this search has been run by dumb people. I think it's the exact opposite, which is why I'm kind of encouraged. I think it's been run by smart people, and I do like the expansive nature to it. It seems almost overwhelming. They're talking to everybody, but I said it last night. I said it yesterday. I say it again now. I think the more smart people you talk to, the more information you gather, which leads you to a better mindset to eventually make the right decision.
BT and Sal on the Fan will come back. We will get to your calls on Pete Alonso or whatever else. The NFL playoffs, certainly wild card weekend, so we'll take your calls on that. Then we'll have our picks coming up at 1:20, so still plenty more to do. 888-808-1019.